May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our heart be always acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So you guys remember, like, 8 years ago, there was this devastating earthquake in Haiti. Big deal. It was part of, like, international conversation. There was lots of aid that flowed to Haiti. You know, it killed over 100,000 people. You know, hundreds of thousands of more end up with no water. They lose their homes. The food is gone. The infrastructure of the island is just kind of decimated. It was a big, big thing. I know you probably remember. It's on your radar to some degree. And it was something that everyone was talking about because it was so tragic and there needed to be so many hands to come together to do any sort of restorative work in Haiti. Because it was such a big deal, it also garnered a lot of commentary. And one of the people that offered public commentary on this was a very prominent evangelical Christian leader. And this man has has a large platform, lots of followers. And he said publicly that the reason that the earthquake had hit Haiti and had been so devastating was because the Haitians had made a pact with Satan. Do you remember this? This is why this had happened, okay? So, obviously, it got a lot of attention. There was criticism of this comment, both within and from outside the church. But the best response was this one. There's a journalist that writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and she wrote a letter, an open letter, to this leader, this evangelical Christian leader, but the letter, she wrote it as Satan, all right? And this is how it goes. Dear sir, the names have been changed to protect the innocent. I know that you know that all press is good press, so I appreciate the shout out. And you make God look like a big, mean bully who kicks people when they are down, so I'm all over that action. But when you say that Haiti has made a pact with me, it's totally humiliating. I may be evil incarnate, but I'm no welcher. I mean, the way you put it, making a deal with me leaves folks desperate and impoverished. I mean, sure, in the afterlife, but when I strike bargains with people here, they first get something on earth, like glamour, beauty, talent, wealth, fame, glory, a golden fiddle. Those Haitians have nothing. I mean, nothing. And that was before the earthquake. Haven't you seen Crossroads or Damn Yankees? If I had a thing going with Haiti, there'd be lots of banks and skyscrapers, SUVs, exclusive nightclubs, Botox, that kind of thing. An 80% poverty rate is so not my style. I mean, nothing against it. I'm just saying, not how I roll. Look, buddy, you're doing great work, and I don't want to clip your wings. Just come on, you're making me look bad, and not the good kind of bad. So keep blaming God. That's working. But leave me out of it, please. Or we may need to renegotiate your own contract. All the best, Satan. Okay. I know. It's such a brilliant piece of, like, creative resistance. Now, this is why I bring it up. Why did this leader feel like he needed to say anything about the cause of this utterly devastating disaster? Why did people rally to push back against that sentiment? And why does it feel, you know, kind of like, wow, that's really creative? Like, why does it spawn this sort of creative response? I think the reason is because the notion and the question about, did God cause this thing to happen? If there's a bad thing that's happened, that there must be an explanation for it. And is that explanation somehow divine? This is an age-old temptation. This is something that's been around. It's tempted people to do for a long time. And furthermore, it's also an age-old anxiety. Because if it's not happening to you, it's happening to them. And so that must be why God did that. But if it is happening to you, well, then it only takes a matter of time before you start wondering, well, is God doing this to me? Why is this happening? Do you all know this question? right? It's one of those things, it's been around for millennia. Human beings have struggled with this for a long time. They've asked this question, why are these things happening? Is God doing this to me? Over and over again. I mean, to the point, it would actually be nice if Jesus like just straight addressed this question one time, right? Can we just get some commentary on this? Oh, wait, he does address it directly, specifically, exclusively in that gospel reading today. Jesus actually answers this question. He speaks to it directly. So pull out your bulletins here. I want you to see what he's doing on page 2, because Jesus is going to talk about this. Now, this was a long gospel reading, right, acolytes? We were talking about it earlier, right? I mean, you know, how's the face? Are you good? All right. And so it's a long gospel reading. When we got after it on Wednesday night, which is where we prepared this sermon as a community, we did a lot of work. There's tons of content. There's questions that Jesus and his disciples ask about a man, or the disciples ask about a man born blind. Jesus corrects them. He heals the guy. That sets off a chain of events where he gets dragged in front of the religious intelligentsia of his day. They start questioning him and as to whether or not he's really the same guy. They pull his parents in. His parents throw him under the bus. And then finally it ends with the man kind of getting free and going and talking to Jesus, and they have this weird cryptic conversation about the Son of Man. Now, all that was going on Wednesday night. What did everybody want to talk about? The first 3 verses, okay? They want to talk about this question. When bad things happen, is God causing it? Is there a reason to ascribe blame, okay? So, look at how the story starts. First, as Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" All right, so this is like vintage first century worldview. In ancient times, if you were someone who was afflicted in mind or body, if you were poor, if you were sick, then God was against you. This was a sign of divine unfavor. You must have did something to deserve it, right? And whether we can see it or not, it might not have been you, it might have been your mom and daddy, but you did something, and that's why you've been afflicted by this, okay? This is why Jesus is, and then conversely then, if you are able-bodied, if you are healthy, if you are rich, well, you must have did something to deserve that too. God is clearly on your side. Everybody can see how much favor there is for you by virtue of your state and standing in life, right? This is why Jesus' teachings about economics were so countercultural and remain so today. They flip the conventional wisdom. Jesus kept saying, actually, I know you think it works where the people that are the haves are the ones that have all the divine favor. But the thing is, they're having the hardest time figuring out how to join what God's doing in this world, because the way you enter this kingdom is through your need and your weakness and your brokenness. And sometimes when you're in a strong position and you have everything and your hands are full, well, you can't figure out how to get there. The stuff gets in the way. So that's why people struggle with this over and over again. So they bring this question to Jesus and they're like, look, here's this guy, he's been blind since he was born. Can you just settle it once and for all for us? Everybody knows he must have done something. Is it his sin or is it his parents' sin? Can you just clear that up? Is it one or the other? Is it A or is it B? Which one is it? Okay, so then Jesus enters the fray and clears everything up. Neither this man nor his parents sin. Okay, Jesus is about to totally sidestep the whole issue. He's going to move to a different plane on this. He's clearly not entering this blame scenario. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. Well, that sounds worse, right? That actually sounds like God did this to this blind man. God gave him this blindness so that all these years later, Jesus could show up with the cameras of the gospel running and he could heal them in order to show off and make a point to the disciples. Well, that doesn't sound right either, does it? But that's kind of how it reads. What is going on? When you encounter something that is really horrific, really difficult, pain comes your way, something happens to a family member, you lose someone you love, job goes away through no fault of your own, you find yourself in a place of struggle, all right? It is very, very natural to ask the question, why is this happening, right? What's going on? The problem is, and we've talked about this before, the why question ends up not really getting you anywhere, okay? Because it's a question that becomes answered in your head, okay? So if, for example, if Charles Duckett is here and something horrible has happened, Charles has lost someone that he loves dearly. I don't want to say Carolyn, she's right here. So, you know, and he comes to me as this priest and he's like, Dixon, tell me, like, why is this happening? Why is this happening to me, right? And I'm like, well, Charles, you need to understand. Death is a part of life. And, you know, this person that you loved, they gotten sick and the sickness overtook their body and it shut down their organs and they died, right? Am I answering the question that he's asking? No, I'm a terrible priest, aren't I, right? Which may or may not still be true. But the reason it's a bad answer is because it answers the why question, but he's not asking a why question. What he's asking is something in his heart. Can any sense be made of this? Can there be something redemptive that comes out of this? Will I be okay on the other side of this? So this is why the why question is so difficult and ends up being so toxic when we want to set up a blame scenario. Whose fault is it? Why is this happening? It's never going to end us up anywhere good. This is also why when someone approaches you, right, and they say, Charles, I know that you're suffering. Actually, Carolyn, I know that you're suffering because you're married to Charles. But I want you to know, in your pain, sweetie, in your pain, God has a plan, right? Has anyone ever said that to you when you were in pain? Did you just kind of want to shake them until they went unconscious? I mean, you totally should not do that. And we'll talk about the myth of redemptive violence on Palm Sunday and how it's not okay. But that's that thing. It's like people do that all the time. It's because they're looking for an explanation. Who sinned, this man or his parents? Just tell us, how do we explain this thing that has happened? Jesus is not interested in that. Jesus is asking a different set of questions. Jesus doesn't give in to those categories. Now, what he says sounds like it might. What he says is, this man was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him, which kind of sounds like the comfort I gave to Carolyn Duckett. God has a plan, but it can't be, because to say, well, this happened so that some greater good could be accomplished, that's an explanation, isn't it? And we ain't in the explaining business. That's not what this text is about. This text is about something else. So if it's not about explanation, what is it about? Jesus is talking about how God will participate in your suffering. This is about the way that God is not here to explain things away. This is about the way God can take anything that has come your way and use it as raw material for redemption. There is no pain, struggle, tragedy, flaw, addiction that you walk around with that God doesn't look at and say, I can totally work with this. Absolutely. Nothing puts you out of the reach of redemption and healing. That's what I do. And that's why Jesus, when confronted with, hey, do you want to explain it? Jesus is like, not really interested in why, but I'm super interested in what's next. And he heals the man, because there's nothing that Jesus can't take and work it into the great healing of all things that God is accomplishing. Even your darkest, most hurtful, painful, tragic circumstances can be raw material for redemption. You can see why people, when they first heard this, said, well, that's good news. Is there anybody for whom that would be good news today? Right? Now, this sermon then could end with me saying, all right, there's a lot of broken stuff out there. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of things that are going wrong. You all need to get on out there, join up with what God is doing, and make it better. Get working on redemption. And that's totally a Christian message. That is part of the biblical narrative. But that is not what John's gospel is interested in talking to you about. What John is interested in talking to you about, remember, is the mystical side of things. John is interested in going to the interior parts of your life. John is trying to work around your head, which wants explanation, and into your heart, which is about participation. How can I participate in that with you? Will you let me in? Can we do something with this? So the end of this sermon, then, calls me to revisit a metaphor I used a long time ago here. It's kind of like a backpack. That's right. I brought it back around. I'm not just wearing it for ha-has. So when we walk around this world and we deal with what comes at us and we grapple with our families of origin, we handle the things that have been done to us, the things left undone, the stuff that came at us that wasn't fair, wasn't right, we have to deal with. It's basically like stuff gets put in this backpack that we're wearing and we walk around with it, right? We carry it around and it's with us all the time. Everybody here has got stuff in their backpack, right? Does anybody know what their backpack is? Do you know the stuff in your backpack? Do you guys know what's in your backpacks? Like, even the acolytes are like, yeah, we haven't been around as long as y'all, but we still got stuff. Like, everybody's got stuff. Everybody does. And it's in there. And you're carrying it, okay? But like on a hiking trip, when you're hiking with people and you're carrying a backpack, you've got stuff in it, but there comes a time in the hike where you take it off and you open it up, and what you see in the backpack, like, oh, yeah, yeah. I brought some stuff that's good for us. I got a water bottle that's good for us on this hike. I got a map. That's going to be really helpful. That's going to be useful for us, right? You know what else I got? I got a pocket knife. That'll be good. That's a great tool. You start to realize that you're like, oh, yeah, in this backpack, if I open it and if I look in it and I take stock of what's there, there's all this stuff in there that isn't just useful to me for my journey. It's useful to everybody else I'm traveling with, too. It's useful to everyone that I'm in this with, as well as myself. But I have to open it and look at it. And the things that you're carrying in your backpack are the same way. You will just carry them around and they will weigh you down, and you will try to explain them or blame them your whole life unless you open it. But if you open that backpack and you start looking and taking an honest inventory of what's in there, this is what happened to me. This is what went down. This is what she did. This is what he said. This is what they didn't do. This is what my mom didn't act like. This is what my dad did act like. This was the thing that this is the choice that I made, that was just, whatever it is that's in here, right? If you open it up and you take honest stock of it, that is the first step toward inviting God to do something with it. That is the first step toward Jesus saying, this was not the end of you. This happened so that there could be something new that came out of it. I can bring something new out of that. I can work some redemption out of that. Will you let me? And then what you'll find out is it starts to happen. Raise your hand if you had something bad happen to you and then something good actually came out of it on the other side. Look at all the hands that are up. Look at the hands. Look around. This is not like two people or the priest that gets paid for this. This actually happens, right? And it happens when it's because this is how the world works. This is how new creation works. This is what resurrection is. It's about this backpack that you're carrying around, and when you open it, God starts to redeem things. And what you will realize is that when God starts to heal the things that are in here, you become somebody that shares that with others, and you become an agent of healing too. God brings so much glory and redemption out of even the saddest things that happen to us, that there's nothing so sad that God can't use it and won't use you to help someone else. It's like Anne Lamott says, what's the most powerful sermon in the world? It's two words, me too, right? So the question that this sermon leaves us with is, what is in your backpack that could really help somebody else? What are you carrying around that somebody else really, really needs to hear will not be the end of them? What is the pain? What is the abuse? What is the toxic relationship that you need to take stock of, you need to look at, you need to invite the divine into? What is the addiction that's in there, knowing that it won't be the end of you? When you need help, there's gonna be somebody else with a backpack there for you. And then soon enough, you'll find, and it happens over and over again, there will be a time that it's your turn to share what's in your backpack too. So in a gospel about seeing what you can't see. My friends, may you have eyes to see what is in your backpack and what God might do with it to the glory of the kingdom. Amen.